The Emperor's New Clothes in the AI-First Era. What the heirs of tomorrow must see earlier than their parents, TLDR. Hans Christian Andersen's fairy tale of the Emperor's New Clothes is not a harmless story about vanity, but a precise model of how entire systems collectively suppress obvious truths. Today, the Emperor no longer sits only in the palace, but in markets, companies, delivery models, and educational logics that pretend the old world is still intact. This text tells a modern real-time version of this story, with a seer, a deus ex machina, willing allies, sluggish administrators, and the heirs of tomorrow, for whom AI first is long since no longer specialized knowledge, but emerging basic education. Those who recognize the Emperor's nakedness too late lose not only markets, but the future viability of the next generation. What the fairy tale is really about. In the fairy tale, an emperor and his entire court are persuaded that an invisible garment can only be seen by the clever and worthy. No one dares to say that there is no garment at all, because no one wants to appear stupid. Only a child speaks the obvious: the emperor is naked. The punchline lies deeper than one usually understands as a child. The child is not the naive figure of the story, but the most intelligent. It does not confuse status with truth. It does not confuse social agreement with reality. And that is precisely why it is the only adult in the room. Today the emperor no longer sits in the palace. Today the emperor rarely sits in a purple cloak. He sits in business models that have lost their validity. He sits in sales logics that no longer read the market. He sits in delivery systems that still pretend that team size, process abundance, and outsourcing automatically mean productivity. And he sits in families that sense their children will live in an AI-first world, without yet really understanding what that means for education, attitude, and capacity to act. That is why Andersen's fairy tale is not old. It is uncomfortably current. The first nakedness: the market has long since moved elsewhere. Let us take as a shell not cosmetics, not retail in general, apparently completely different market. Urban mobility, e-bikes, cargo bikes, new sales logic, the present can be observed very clearly there. In Germany, around 2 million e-bikes were sold in 2025. Sales have been at a high level for years, even if the overall market fluctuates. At the same time, as early as 2024, around 86% of the industry's revenue was already accounted for by e-bikes. And there is a second break. Sales are shifting away from purely brick-and-mortar retail towards online platforms and direct-to-consumer models. Anyone who still speaks in such a market as if the old business were the actual reality is not speaking soberly. He is speaking courtly, not because he is lying, but because he lives in an image that has lost its plausibility. The child sees it first. In every real transition phase, there is a figure who sees earlier than others, not necessarily because they are more intelligent in the abstract sense, but because they stay closer to reality. They look, they test, they talk to customers, they observe prices, they listen to friction, not prestige. I call this figure the seer. The seer is not the loudest, he is not the title holder, and he is almost never the one who masters the official language of the system best. But he is the first to notice when what everyone still calls reason is only a belated form of habit. In the old fairy tale, the child says, "The emperor is naked." In the modern economy, the seer says, "The market has long since become different from what you tell yourselves." The court keeps talking as if nothing had happened. Systems rarely sustain themselves through error alone. They sustain themselves through roles. There is the administrator. He embodies seriousness, caution, procedures, familiar calculations. He is not evil. He is usually not even stupid. But his judgment depends on a world in which his previous empirical values still hold. There is the follower. He does not invent the facade, but he stabilizes it. He sends different signals depending on the situation, avoids open friction, and adapts to the dominant tone. Known groupthink, that is, high conformity in the assessment of complex situations. Pluralistic ignorance, that is, the state in which everyone infers from the silence of others that everything must already be in order. And the status quo bias, the emotional preference for the existing over the risky new. In other words, the court often sees more than it says, and that is precisely why the lie lasts so long. The second nakedness: performance is also produced differently now. Now comes the second level, and it is perhaps even more explosive than the first. Because not only the market is tipping, the production logic is tipping too. For decades, a very modern fairy tale went roughly like this. Anyone who wants to build digital products quickly and efficiently needs many people, many hours, many intermediate stages, a lot of control, a lot of handovers, a lot of process. Size was considered security. Outsourcing was considered rationality. Diligence was considered progress. Then came AI tools, app builders, co-pilots, agentic systems, generative interfaces. And suddenly a dangerous question could be asked, what if that was really necessary, and what if that was only the garment of the old production order? McKinsey describes the situation quite unambiguously. 92% of companies want to increase their AI investments in the next 3 years. But only 1% of executives describe their own organization as mature in the actual integration of AI into workflows and business outcomes. According to McKinsey, the major barrier is not primarily technology, but leadership. That means, even where AI has long since arrived rhetorically, the internal production logic is often still old. Serios ex machina. At this point, the story needs a second leading figure. The seer recognizes the break, but someone must also explain it, expose it, and practically prove it. I call this figure Serios ex machina, not because he is magical, but because at first he appears like magic within the system. Serios ex machina is the trickster, the disenchanter, the operational philosopher with access to tools. He does not quite belong to the court. He does not believe in the old sentences of reverence. And he is disconcerting for all those who derive their self-image from celebrating process. What makes him dangerous is not opinion. It is testability. He tries out for himself, with new AI tools, what until now was supposedly only possible via classic external delivery apparatuses. He does not just build slides about the future. He pulls on reality. And it is precisely through this that it becomes clear. Part of what used to look like compelling complexity was, in truth, a mixture of historical scarcity, tool deficits, and institutional self-reassurance. Serios ex machina therefore does not merely say, the market has changed. He says, and the way we produce performance has too. That makes him the second figure of the child. No longer just perception against facade, but also building practice against ritual. Why administrators find this second nakedness so hard to see? Because they already have enough to carry with the first. Anyone who is still busy defending the old market image against visible reality will hardly want to admit at the same time that their own production logic was based on an outdated image of people and processes. Then sentences arise like, that is not reliable. That is not professional enough. That does not scale. That is just a trick. You cannot seriously set it up like that. Sometimes such objections are reasonable. Sometimes they are just the courtly remnant of the old order. The real test criterion is then no longer whether something sounds unfamiliar, but whether it produces output. And that is exactly where AI first begins. AI first is not a technology question, but a power question. AI first does not mean you now just use a few new tools as well. AI first means you think from a changed production logic. No longer who has the most hands, who has the longest process, who writes the thickest project plan, who creates the most busyness, but who creates the clearest output, who can really use new tools, who combines judgment with speed, who builds more substance with less friction. The IMF describes the broader labor market logic behind this very clearly. An analysis of millions of job postings shows that in advanced economies, already every 10th posting demands at least one new skill. Almost 40% of global jobs are affected by AI-driven changes. And for the future, what is needed is not only more specialists, but above all, cognitive, creative, and technical skills that work with AI instead of against it. AI first is therefore not just an operating model. It is a new alphabet for value creation. The allies in whom the future becomes visible. No real upheaval story is carried by heroes and opponents alone. The allies are decisive. There is the one whose old model has started to slip and who has to relearn. There is the young receiver, loyal, willing to perform, not yet cynical. There is the creative, whose talent only becomes future-proof through contact with reality. There is the sales realist who does not ask ideologically, but simply wants to know what the world actually buys. And there are the switchers who are not the first to see, but quickly understand when truth becomes reliable. These figures are not decorative. In them it becomes clear whether exposure only destroys or creates new resilience. If the future becomes visible anywhere, it is rarely first in mission statements, usually first in small circles of people who begin to trust reality more than the facade. Why the heirs of tomorrow are affected in particular. Here the story becomes bigger, because it is no longer just about companies or markets. It is about transfer. The great transfer of wealth in the coming years is not an abstract financial movement. It is a question of education, leadership, and maturation. Fortune summarizes it very directly via an HSBC survey of almost 1,000 wealthy entrepreneurs. More than a third plan to exit in the next 5 years. More than half want to keep the company and the family if possible. At the same time, many worry about the work ethic, interest, knowledge, and skills of their children. 7 out of 10 consider the preparedness of the next generation a key factor in the timing of their own exit. Report itself, this becomes even more concrete. Among the most common concerns in wealth transfer are the family's lack of skills and knowledge, lack of interest in the family business, lack of confidence in the ability to run companies or wealth, as well as the stress on the next generation. Many next-gen entrepreneurs retrospectively recommend earlier conversations, more formalized advice, and structured education for the succession process. This is more than wealth planning. This is a silent alarm. The silent target group of this story, you can already see this unease in very different milieus. In the family entrepreneur who asks less whether his daughter will one day hold shares than whether she will even understand in an AI-first world what she is holding. In the self-made family that has done everything right and now senses that background, good schools, and networks alone will no longer automatically carry their children. Even ultra-wealthy parents are now worried about their children's professional future in an AI-driven labor market. In the cosmopolitans who naturally send their children through several languages, countries, and institutions, and are only slowly realizing that AI-first is another language. HSBC explicitly describes today's entrepreneurs as highly internationalized. Almost half live in more than one country. Three-quarters do business across borders. And in the discrete wealth families who have long been introducing their successors to family office logics, governance issues, and educational programs because they sense that wealth without judgment is only a softly padded form of blindness. The family office world is growing rapidly. There are now over 8,000 single-family offices worldwide. And educational programs for this sphere often cost around $12,000 for a few days or a week. That is precisely why the heirs of tomorrow are not a sentimental side figure in this story, but its real main point. What parents might understand too late here. Many parents are already investing massively in status signals of the old educational world, the right school, right city, the right network, the right university, the right cultural polish. All this remains valuable. But the mistake begins where these things are considered sufficient. When AI first becomes the new basic education, it is no longer enough to send children into the old symbols of the future. You have to bring them into relation with a different reality, with proximity to tools, with judgment, with cognitive agility, with productive curiosity, with the ability to work with machines without inwardly submitting to them. In other words, it is not enough for children to have access to education. They must be prepared for a world in which value creation is organized differently. The real mistake of the courtly adults. The courtly adult believes that the future arises through rank, planning, and control. The child knows. The future begins with the sentence that no one wants to say. The seer speaks it. The trickster proves it. The allies learn to endure it. And the heirs of tomorrow will depend on it. Because what do we actually bequeath if we pass on wealth, schools, and contacts, but no AI-first suitability for reality? Then we may bequeath possessions without judgment, options without orientation, and shelters without a future. Conclusion: the moment when someone again says that the emperor is naked. Those who see the emperor naked have not yet won anything. Something is only won when seeing turns into a different way of dealing with reality. When markets are no longer read according to memory. When performance is no longer confused with process abundance. When leadership no longer consists of courtly reassurance. When parents stop bequeathing their children only the badges of the old world. And when the heirs of tomorrow do not just enter into possession, but into perception, judgment, and proximity to tools. In other words, the problem of our time is not only that the emperor is naked. The problem is that far too many adults are still afraid to say it out loud. And perhaps the future begins exactly where someone calmly says again what the child has always known.